Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 3:30. We are meeting in room 205 in the Capitol Building. Today is Tuesday, April 23rd. Members present today are Senator Geisel, Senator Dunbar, Senator Tobin, and we are expecting Vice Chair Kaufman. And myself, Senator Wilson, is here. We do have a quorum to conduct business today. We have three items on the agenda this afternoon. First, we'll take up HB 17, contraceptives covered, insured MedAssist. We'll then move on to HB 371, Medical Review Organizations, followed by SB 231, Minors Residential Psych Treatment Centers. And we are joined by Senator Kaufman. First up, and here at the table, we have Representative Carrick to hear HB 17. We heard an initial hearing and took Biden public testimony with the Senate companion, SB 27, by Senator Tobin on March 12th. We heard an introduction of this bill to invite in public testimony on April 11th. At this time, we also adopted version U as a unicorn as our working committee substitute. And at this time, we just do a quick review of Senator, with Representative Carrick and her staff here at the table. If you guys want to do a quick introduction of what this bill does and just a quick overview.
Sure, thank you. And thanks to the members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. For the record, Ashley Carrick, representative for House District 35 in West Fairbanks. And House Bill 17, just as a brief reintroduction, reduces barriers to contraceptive access and it simply extends the current contraceptive coverage from 1 to 3 months up to 12 months. So I'm happy to take any questions the committee might have on the legislation.
All right. Is there any committee questions on the current version U before we go into an amendment? Seeing none, I believe we have amendment number one, Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment U1, amendment one.
I'll object for purposes of discussion, Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may ask for an assist as some of this is a bit technical and I want to ensure that I'm putting correct information on the public record. So what Amendment 1 does is simply bring this bill into alignment with Medicaid regulations. And I might ask the Division of Insurance to provide some assistance here in explaining some of the exact changes, but I want to make sure that folks understand exactly what this amendment is seeking to do. So the first significant change is a conforming language. There's on page one, line one, there's deletion of the second occurrence of and. We then move to page one, line two, where we add an effective date. So that's in the title there. The real substantive changes comes on page two, starting on line seven. And that's where you see some language added in section line seven, eight, and nine. And that really is deleting some language and replacing it with some new language. This was recommended by the Division of Insurance. And we might ask Director Wing-Hire here to help explain exactly what it does. But it's seeking to help us change the fiscal note and make it a zero fiscal note. So there is no fiscal impact with regards to how this may intersect with Medicaid. That same shift is seen on lines 14 through 23, which again brings the alignment into agreement with Medicaid so that there is no fiscal impact and helps create or remove the indeterminate fiscal note that was added to this legislation. We then have one of the larger changes in this bill, and that's going to be on page 3, lines 6 through 13. And you can see there that there was some language added on the House floor regarding religious exemptions, and the changes made here on lines 1 through 9 on page 3 were at the recommendation of Director Wing-Hire, and she can speak to these changes. But the first change is to allow a religious employer who opposes coverage for each enrollee to the employer's health care insurance plan before the enrollee's plan and allow the insurance, oh my goodness, we may have to ask her to come in and provide some additional clarity as I want to make sure that I'm saying correctly, but essentially allows a religious employer to oppose coverage underneath the stipulation in the amendment. And, of course, the very last section on page 7, you'll see on line 31, we have an effective date, which is an important piece of legislation and helps us remove the indeterminate fiscal note. So I think Director Rehire can come and answer any questions specifically about the religious exemption language or the Medicaid changes to remove the fiscal note of the proposed legislation.
Director Wingheyer, you just want to provide any additional comments from Senator Tobin's explanation of amendment number U1?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Tobin, for bringing this amendment forward. The first two pieces, the third, page 2, lines 7 through 9, and page 2, lines 14 through 23. When the Affordable Care Act became the law of the land, if you will, we adopted what was known as the essential health benefits. If we add to the essential health benefits, and this was considered adding to the essential health benefits, then the state is expected to defray the cost. And we added an indeterminate fiscal note. We don't know how much it would have been had the CMS actually made us do it. But there was a chance. We had many conversations when this bill has been heard in various legislative sessions before this one to confirm that this would be considered a change to our essential health benefits with a cost. The second change, as far as the religious employers, it's not so much the division objects to the language, but the division has no control over religious employers. We regulate insurance companies, and we don't know how we would mandate going into an employer and telling them that they had to or list various options for an employee on an annual basis or prospective employee. We just don't have that statutory authority to go into an employer. And those, sir, are our changes, and we love the fact that it now has an effective date that we can get the insurers, if this bill passes, to put this in the plan.
And I guess we can bring up the representative to see if Rep. Carrick has any comments on the amendment.
For the record, Ashley Carrick, representative for House District 35, and I am supportive of these changes. I think they are technical in nature, but substantive in that they allow the bill to take effect in a way that is actually effective and don't generate a fiscal note, which was not the intent of the legislation initially. So cleaning up that language is, I think, very valuable to the bill moving forward.
All right. Are there any further questions for the bill sponsor, Director Wingheyer, or Senator Tobin? Seeing none, I will go ahead and remove my objection as a further objection to the adoption of Amendment Number 1, U.1. Seeing none, the amendment moves, which brings the House Bill 17 before us as amended. Are there any further questions to the bill sponsor of House Bill 17 as amended? Seeing none, is there any closing comments the bill sponsor would like to make?
Just a thank you to the chair and the members of the committee for taking this up for consideration.
All right. And looking for the will of the committee, Senator Kaufman.
I have a motion. I move HB 17 version 33-LS0222/U as amended from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
All right. Is there any objection? Hearing none, the bill moves from the next committee of referral. We'll take a brief IDs to sign paperwork, and as we transition to our next item, House Bill 371.
We are back on the record. Our next item of business is House Bill 371, Medical Review Organizations, by Representative Ruffridge. We have Representative Ruffridge and his staff, Ms. Braun, here at the table to give us a brief reminder of what this legislation does. Just for the committee, we heard this, we heard an introduction and took a section analysis of this legislation and took invited public testimony on April 11th, and our office has received no amendments for this bill. Senator Ruffridge. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Wilson. Members of the committee, I apologize actually for not being present for that first hearing. I was otherwise occupied, and I was told that my staff did an incredible job, so appreciate them for standing in and giving a presentation. So this bill simply seeks to adjust some of the components of medical review organizations, organizations that in the state meet to have recommendations and data points for deaths, particularly those that might occur for some reason that would not be considered in the norm. So we have three that meet in this state currently, maternal deaths and childhood deaths, overdose deaths, and I actually am forgetting the other one off the top of my head. I'm sure Ms. Braun will remember, but there's three that meet currently. Right now, in statute, the persons who can serve on that board are actually limited and prescribed in statute. This bill seeks to allow individuals who serve in a medical capacity in some form of their employment to serve on the board, and then it also allows the chief medical officer to be the creator and the administrator over those boards rather than the state medical board. So it's a bill essentially to allow flexibility in the creation and management of those boards, to allow them to be a little more nimble and to provide that data set in a quicker fashion. Then that is the final change in the bill, is it takes what was previously data that was not necessarily available either interdepartmentally or through to the public, and makes that data be available in a report after the confidential information has been redacted or stripped out. And so there would be an expectation that some of that information would then be made available to the general public or to another department who might have need of that data. So thank you again for having a second hearing on this bill. That was as brief as I can be. And I guess I should have introduced myself for the record. I am Justin Ruffridge, and I'm the representative for District 7. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ruffridge. Ms. Braun, do you have anything that you'd like to add?
For the record, Sabina Braun, staff to Representative Ruffridge. I just want to add that the third review organization in Alaska is the Congenital Syphilis Board.
Thank you. Are there any questions to the bill sponsor on this piece of legislation before us? Seeing none, are there any final comments from the bill sponsor?
No, thank you very much for taking the time today to hear the bill.
All right, and looking for the will of the committee. Senator Kaufman.
I have a motion. I move HB 371 version 33-LS1366-A from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, House Bill 371 version A has moved from committee. We'll take another brief at ease to sign paperwork before moving on to SB 231. We're back on the record. Our final item of business this afternoon is SB 231, Minor Residential Psych Treatment Centers, by Senator Klayman. We heard an introduction and took a sectional analysis of this bill and invited in public testimony on April 11th. At this time, we have invited Senator Klayman. I don't know what's the end of senators today.
Okay, I sometimes say I chair the House committee. So
we have Senator Klayman and his staff, Claire, at the table to give us a brief reminder of what this legislation accomplished. And then we'll go, and I believe we have a CS by Senator Clayman's office. Senator Clayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Just a short review. The legislation involves improving the rights of minors receiving inpatient psychiatric care in Alaska. It includes providing 1 hour of communication each week with a parent or guardian, annual inspections twice a year by the department, and reporting the use of seclusion and restraint over minors receiving inpatient psychiatric treatment in Alaska. And I can provide the sectional analysis and the two different sectionals you have in front of you, or not sectionals, but versions.
All right, we don't need a full sectional right now. Let's, when we see, at this time, the bill sponsor has requested a CS and worked with our office to put one together for before the committee for their consideration. Is there a motion for CS, Senator Kaufman?
A motion. I move to adopt CS for SB 231 version 33-LS1196/S as our working document.
Great. I have object for purposes of discussion. Senator Clayman, can you walk us through the CS, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To add slightly to complication, there are three versions of Senate Bill 231 in front of you today. Version A, which we discussed in the first meeting, version B, and version S. Version B integrated the feedback that came from the first hearing, but included an unintended limitation on the applicability of the legislation, so we corrected that limitation in version S. Version A of Senate Bill 231, the first version, only applies to minors receiving treatment at facilities licensed as residential psychiatric treatment centers. In discussion with the department and other stakeholders, we learned that residential psychiatric treatment centers are only one type of license for facilities that provide inpatient mental health care to minors. Some facilities are currently licensed as specialty hospitals or psychiatric hospitals. We wanted to ensure that all facilities providing inpatient mental health evaluation or treatment to minors are included in Senate Bill 231, regardless of the facility's current or future type of license. Version B of Senate Bill 231 expanded the bill's application to treatment facilities, defined in AS 47.30.915 as a hospital, clinic, institution, center, or other healthcare facility that has been designated by the department for the treatment of or rehabilitation of mentally ill persons. Then we received feedback from the Department of Health and the Department of Family and Community Services that the definition for treatment facility in AS 47.30.915 is used specifically in designating psychiatric treatment facilities for involuntary admission. Using this definition of treatment facility could unintentionally limit the scope of Senate Bill 231. Version S of 231 creates a new definition statute defining treatment facility as a hospital, clinic, institution, center, or other healthcare facility licensed to provide inpatient mental health evaluation and treatment to minors. Both version B and version S include clarification on a minor patient's rights to confidential communications while at a treatment facility. First, the weekly one-hour requirement can be waived due to law or court order, or if it's considered therapeutically unadvisable by an overseeing physician. Second, the communication can be between a patient and their guardian, parent, or another adult approved by an overseeing physician. And third, communication can be via video or telephone, and the weekly one-hour requirement can be satisfied by cumulative sessions at no more than four occasions. Both version B and version S add a requirement that the Department of Health annually publish a report on their internet website on the aggregate total uses of seclusion and restraint at each treatment facility. And finally, version S differs from version B in a modification to the requirement for the Department of Health to conduct unannounced inspections of treatment facilities twice each year. In version S, this provision only applies to treatment facilities in which a minor spends more than three nights in the preceding year. This change prevents excessive inspection of facilities that provide short-term inpatient psychiatric treatment for minors in a mental health crisis, such as a hospital emergency room. In summary, version S of SB 231 provides the most clarified and inclusive application of the bill's provision, and I encourage the committee to adopt version S today. My staff, Claire Lupke, has prepared a summary of changes for version A to B and version B to S and version A to S that are in your bill packets. If the committee would like, she can review all those documents for the record.
No, I think we have them as far as our packet. Unless Claire, unless you really are enthused and want to go through them, we can. Or if another committee member would like that explanation, we can do that. Seeing no. I just want to ask, this is a sort of a large CS. Just wanted to get the department's view on this CS if possible. There's lots of people here in the department, so I'm not sure who would like to come up. And just maybe if they could just talk to maybe clarity of this CS or just implementation.
Good afternoon. For the record, Tracy Dompling, the Director for the Division of Behavioral Health. Just a few comments. I think that overall, we believe in the spirit of this bill, and it is important to make sure that when kids are in this high level of inpatient care, that they do have rights, and we are making sure that the care they are receiving is appropriate care, and it's safe care, and it's rehabilitative care. I think from the perspective today, we were trying to go through and figure out exactly, what does the new CS really entail and what type of facilities is that? And there was a lot of conversation going on within our department and Department of Family and Community Services. There was one thing that came up as well about possibly creating confusion on another definition of treatment facility within the statutes. Yes, there's already a definition there, so that could confuse things moving forward. I was also listening just a minute ago to Senator Klayman's discussion about, three nights where somebody may have spent time in an emergency room. And those emergency rooms, I can let Director Gayhart speak more to that, but, are not licensed as inpatient psychiatric treatment facilities. And so, again, just we need to make sure moving forward that I think that the department has a really clear understanding of what facilities are actually encompassed in this bill, kind of what's the intent behind it, what does this body, think is important and which type of facilities we want to make sure that we're monitoring, that we're having the reports on seclusion and restraint. It's usually the higher levels of care that are the ones that are doing the seclusion and restraint that have to have the policies to even support their abilities to do seclusion and restraint. I'm going to pass it to Director Gayhart to see if she has anything else to add.
Yeah, for the record, Director Gayhart, Healthcare Services. I don't want to duplicate anything that Director Dompling already said, but I think it's just clarification on treatment facility that it crosses two statutes. So during the licensing process, we license the facility, not necessarily the services. So when looking at those higher level, as Tracy had mentioned, that's where the policies and that would come in to ensure the safety of the individuals in those facilities.
All right. Are there any questions for our directors? Senator Tobin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm kind of honing in on this definition of facility as well, as I see that's been added to the CS before us, and it includes hospital now. And so I'm thinking about particularly API, which operates the Chilcat unit, and in this version of the legislation, the Department of Health would conduct an inspection on a Department of Child and Family Services facility. Am I getting that right, or what am I missing here?
Through the chair to Senator Tobin. I don't think you're missing anything, and that would, of course, create that question of Department of Health going in and doing this surprise inspection at another department's facility, which is also, they have their own accreditation standards that they follow in the hospital.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I understood that was it's an interesting dynamic there.
Any further questions for Director Dompling or Director Gayhart? Seeing none, thank you for coming, directors. And Senator Klayman, do you want to come back to the table here? Any opposition for maybe some language to tighten up some of just those definitions of
We don't. That's essentially that definition, Mr. Chair, has been what we have been working on the CSs, is trying to really narrow that down so that not only it's both narrowing and not making it so narrow that we're excluding hospitals that are providing inpatient psychiatric care to minors. I do think one of the things that the department just commented about emergency rooms, I think under the current definition, because an emergency room isn't licensed to provide inpatient mental health evaluation and treatment, that an emergency room, even with a three-day provision, would still not qualify under the current definition that we have. But we don't have any problem if we can come up with a better definition that not only includes current facilities that are providing inpatient psychiatric care to minors, but others that might get licensed in the future.
Thank you. And I don't share the same concerns of another department going in to review another department. So I wish some of our licensing and department of division of behavioral health would go into our prison systems and help get their accreditation and sort of treatment programs on par with some other ones throughout the state as well. Are there any further questions for the bill sponsor? And I will remove my objection of adopting the CS. Is there a further objection to adopting the CS before us for work draft version S as a working document? Seeing none, version S has been adopted as a working document. I will let committee members have a few days to review this CS before us, and we'll set an amendment deadline Monday, April 29th at noon to our office. Please let us know if you plan on offering any amendments to SB 231. And do you have any closing comments, Senator Clement?
Thank you for hearing the bill.
Clint?
For the record, Claire, staff to Senator Clement. The drafter from Ledge Legal has worked a lot with us on this bill, and I'm sure would be happy to answer questions about that definition as well if the committee members want to work with us on that.
All right. Well, thank you for that, and thank you, Senator Clayman, for working with us on this piece of legislation. That closes our business for today. We'll go ahead and set this bill aside and hopefully bring it up here as soon as after our amendment deadline. On Thursday, we'll return to SB 219 prior authorization by our office, and that might change depending if we have all our amendments together and ready for that piece of legislation. And are there any other closing committee comments? And I know Senator Giesel and Senator Dunbar had other state prior obligations to get to on state business, and that's why they had to depart from committee a little early. It is a pleasure to see three directors in our audience today, except for we only heard for two of them. Should I have had a question for the third one in our audience? But with that, we are adjourned at 4:01 p.m.